verse 11 through Genesis 8, verse 17. I'll be reading from the NIV. I'll let you turn. Everybody ready? All right, here we go. God's word says, in the 600th year of Noah's life, on the 17th day of the second month, on that day, all the springs of the great deep burst forth, and the floodgates of the heavens were opened, and rain fell on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. On that very day, Noah and his sons Shem, Ham, and Japheth, together with his wife and the wives of his three sons, entered the ark. They had with them every wild animal according to its kind, all livestock according to their kind, every creature that moves along the ground according to its kind, and every bird according to its kind, everything with wings. Pairs of all creatures that have the breath of life in them came to Noah and entered the ark. The animals going in were male and female, of every living thing, as God had commanded Noah. Then the Lord shut him in. For 40 days the flood kept coming on the earth, and as the waters increased, they lifted the ark high above the earth. The waters rose and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the surface of the water. They rose greatly on the earth, and all the high mountains were under, the entire heavens were covered. The waters rose and covered the mountains to a depth of more than 20 feet. Every living thing that moved on the earth perished. Birds, livestock, wild animals, all the creatures that swarm over the earth, and all mankind. Everything on dry land that had the breath of life in its nostrils died. Every living thing on the face of the earth was wiped out. Men and animals, and the creatures that move along the ground, and the birds of the air were wiped from the earth. Only Noah was left, and those with him in the ark. The waters flooded the earth for 150 days. But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and the livestock that were with him in the ark, and he sent a wind over the earth, and the waters receded. Now the springs of the deep and the floodgates of the heavens had been closed, and the rains had stopped falling from the sky. The waters receded steadily from the earth. At the end of 150 days, the waters had gone down. And on the 17th day of the seventh month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. The waters continued to recede until the 10th month, and on the first day of the 10th month, the tops of the mountains became visible. After 40 days, Noah opened the window he had made in the ark and sent out a raven, and it kept flying back and forth until the waters had dried up from the earth. Then he sent out a dove to see if the water had receded from the surface of the ground. But the dove could not find a place to rest its feet, because there was water all over the surface of the earth. So it returned to Noah in the ark. He reached out his hand and took the dove and brought it back to himself in the ark. He waited 7 more days and again sent out the dove from the ark. When the dove returned to him in the evening, there was in its beak a freshly plucked olive leaf. Then Noah knew that the water had receded from the earth. He waited 7 more days and sent the dove out again, but this time it did not return to him. By the first day of the first month of Noah's 601st year, the water had dried up from the earth. Noah then removed the covering from the ark and saw that the surface of the ground was dry. By the 27th day of the second month, the earth was completely dry. Then God said to Noah, "Come out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons and their wives. Bring out every kind of living creature that is with you, the birds, the animals, and all the creatures that move along the ground, so they can multiply on the earth and be fruitful and increase in number upon it."
morning. So we just heard from Genesis 7:11 until Genesis, I believe it's 8:17. Thank you. And so as we consider that passage today, I think it's really crucial to think about what we've just heard in the last few stories that we've heard. If you haven't been with us for the past few weeks, we've been talking about Genesis. We're up now to the seventh chapter, but each week we've kind of gone chapter by chapter, if you will, talking about different things. Now, I understand you can't see that well. It's okay. But Genesis 1 through 2, we talked about creation stories. Genesis 3, we talked about Adam and Eve in the fall. We talked about Cain and Abel and the corruption there. We talked about the descendants of Adam. And then kind of the sin of humanity, as it were. And on to Noah's call and where we find ourselves today at the flood. So the issue that we're kind of reaching at this point happens right before the flood. We have a humanity that's incredibly broken. We see this first in Adam and Eve, when Eve takes the fruit and things go bad, right? And they're cast out of Eden. And things get worse. We have Cain and Abel, a brother who kills another, and God looks down saying, you know, Cain, why have you done this? And so as humanity goes on, things just get worse and worse and worse, unfortunately. And corruption just keeps on happening over and over and over again. So we're told that in Genesis 6 that God sees man's great wickedness, right? He sees that things have completely gone downhill. And we hear it over and over again, corruption upon corruption upon corruption. There's not a good thought in their minds. There's not any good intentions. And so now God sees that there's really a problem that we've reached. There's a problem that humanity can't get out of its own tailspin, out of this decline, this corruption. And so the only solution is that it has to end. And so God says that he's going to bring a flood upon the land, wipe out mankind. Now, I don't know about you and how Sunday school went for you, but when I went through that thinking, you know, how could God wipe out mankind? But the reality is that it was the most merciful act that he could have done. The reality is that God so loved the world, right, that he was willing to see that humanity couldn't help itself. Humanity was just in this tailspin, and he needed to throw in the wrench. And so I think before we go into the flood, we need to understand really where humanity is at during this time and the reason for the flood coming upon the earth. So we notice that, as I said, there's corruption, there's evil, right? But one man sticks out among the story. His name is Noah, right? So we're told that he is a man who is righteous and blameless among the people. He walked with God. He was unlike anyone else in his community. And so, unlike his contemporaries, he was a faithful man in simply a faithless world. And so God, seeing his beautiful faith, said, you know, in my mercifulness, I can't get rid of you. You are a beautiful beautiful vision of what faith should be on this earth. And so God says, I need you to prepare, right? I need you to prepare 120 years for this ark. He says, I'm going to give you the dimensions. I'm going to tell you how to prepare for this, who you're going to bring, what you're going to do. And Noah says, okay. Okay. I trust you. It's a little scary, but I trust you, right? I have faith that you will do what you say you will do. And Noah's convicted to follow. He responds in faith. But one of the aspects that we reach, and one of the things that we need to understand about humanity as who walks into this, this is 120 years before the flood even happens. And humanity has rejected him. Now, we can have faith, a wonderful faith in God, but the reality is we need human connection. We need love from one another. No matter how much faith you have, I think that's still difficult. I think that's still a huge challenge to look at every neighbor you have and say, you don't respect me, you don't honor me as your neighbor. And for 120 years to go through that has got to be such an incredible challenge for Noah. But I think Noah noticed something about faith that is so crucial. He recognized that it has its own side effects, if you will. It has its own attributes that are really difficult to handle. He recognized that it's going to make some people uncomfortable. He recognized that it's going to mean that he has a different opinion from some other people of his community. He realized essentially that it was going to be messy, and it wasn't going to be pretty, it wasn't going to be clean. And yet he knew something so crucial about faith. He knew that it would change his life. And he knew ultimately that having a relationship with God could take care of all of those side effects, if you will, could take care of anything he would hit from any part of humanity. Now, he has faith, but now at this point before the flood, the reality is all he has is God. We hear that he is the one out of the entire humanity that is faithful. And yes, he has his wife and his children and the animals who go in the ark with him. We're not really told about their faith. And so I think even among the humanity of his family, it must have been pretty difficult. You know, can you imagine your father, your brother, or your spouse saying, hey, we're going to get together, and I need you to quit your job, I need to leave your home, and this is what we're going to do. And some people do it, but it's a major leap of faith. And we need to recognize just the loneliness that Noah must have been feeling even before the flood began. And so as we get into the flood story, we see the great deluge. Through faith, Noah has said, you know what, I can handle humanity. I'm going to go and I'm going to be committed to you. And so he brings his wife, his sons, their wives, and 500,000 species of animals on this small, small ark, right? So the amazing thing is it happens. God shuts the door. And essentially the deluge begins. And all he has at this point is them and life through the skylight. It's the only window into the world that he has. And I can imagine that's still got to be pretty lonely in itself. Because as 40 days go on, and eventually 150 days of just water itself, you know, this is not a story for children as you think about it, because he's probably sitting there hearing the cry of the people who are dying. And granted, maybe he didn't have close ties in his humanity, but he still lost his home. He still lost everything he knew. And that in itself had to be fairly lonely. And so we hear that everything in 150 days is gone. Everything that is not on that ark, that has had the breath of life poured into it, is gone. And now he's surrounded, right? He's surrounded by this flood. And we see for 150 days, it's just downpour. And it's cold, and it's dark, and it's damp. Now, I don't know about you, but even a few days of rain kind of bums me out, I'm just saying. But I can't even imagine for 150 days of cold, damp, dark. It's a lot, you know? It's a lot to handle. And that in itself can kind of bring you down, right? And then we see it doesn't just stop with the rain. The flood is there. The flood continues. The rain has stopped, but the water is still among them. And from embark to disembark, it's 11 months. Now, I think it's kind of an impossible feat to really think about how this would work in our own lives, to even compare that kind of sense of loneliness and that sense of the leap of faith, really. But if you go with me here, 11 months alone of being in the ark might look like almost a year of strenuous academic work. It might look like 11 months of your child not sleeping. It might look like almost a year of working a really tough job with coworkers you're not that crazy about, right? It's a lot, and it's difficult, and it's hard, and I think it gives us a small glimpse of just the loneliness and the pain that he's going through. And so, as we think about that, we think about the ways in which Noah was alone. He was ousted by his community. He was with his family and animals on a small boat. Now, I think you could argue that that would be, you know, people were on the boat, but after 3 months of being in the same place with the same people, I think you run out of things to talk about for a while, right? So that in itself is fairly difficult and can be fairly lonely. You can be sitting next to the same person you've been sitting next to you and still feel incredibly lonely. And essentially, everything he knows is gone. And I think it would be a terrible story if the story ended there. If we stopped at the end of Genesis 7 and said, okay, we're done. I don't recommend that for your Bible study. That's because something incredible happens in the first two lines or three lines, well, two or three words of Genesis 8. We find out that God remembered. It's really the favorite part of my story. God remembered. And we see that Noah's cry is heard, right? We see that there's a life that's essentially affirmed. We see the sense of God saying, listen, Noah, I'm sorry that it had to happen this way. And I'm sorry that you may have felt apart from me and apart from humanity. But this is kind of how it had to be, and I'm sorry, but I remember your faithfulness. But I think it doesn't only stand alone that God remembered. I think Noah remembered God, too. Noah remembered that God remembered, right? Noah remembered that God really knows that Noah's been faithful, right? But, and understands it starts to piece together what's going on here, that this is the work for good. And amid this cloud, amid this flood, when Noah may not have understood, Noah may have thought, when is this flood going to end? When is the storm going to be over? And I think in Genesis 8, it clicks. It so much clicks for him that God remembered. And kind of in that moment, too, we see that things get better. It's almost like if you have a spigot running into a sink and it just kind of flips off. It's that sudden. The floodgates shut down. The springs of the deep stop. Things are changed. And so that's our first sign, really, to see, you know, this kind of sense of God remembered and God acknowledged. And things continue to progress. Things continue to get better. And we see that after a while, the ark rests on the mounts of Ararat. And then they slowly see the tops of the mountains. And then the earth completely dries out. And it, as this kind of removal of water, we get this sense of, Noah's thinking, God remembers me. God knows me. God has heard my cry and my cries at night just for wanting him to know me. And the second sign we see of God really remembering Noah is a sign of hope. There's a dove and an olive branch. And what happens is Noah is on the ark and sends out the dove a few times, and the dove eventually comes back with an olive branch showing, you know, this is new hope, this is new beginning, this is a new change. And then he sends out the dove once again and it doesn't come back. And the sign that, you know, the sense that, yes, you've remembered me, a physical sign that I can see. And then I think the third thing that we see here is God's kind of ending line when they come out of the ark. And we hear, be fruitful and multiply. Be fruitful and multiply. And I think that's kind of God looking at his child and saying, you know, I see how faithful you are. That's why I rescued you. That's why I kept you safe, so that you can teach others how to be faithful children. And I think that's the great, great sign of God remembered. So again, I think it's the removal of water, the sign of the dove, and that commandment to go out and multiply. And I think the heart of the message, the heart of what we see, is that God remembers the faithful, right? God remembers the faithful and their commands amid the storms and amid the trials of life. When you don't think it's going to stop, when things get too difficult, when life is too hard, God remembers. It may not be in our own timing that we prefer, right? But God remembers. And we also see it, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but you know, you may be led by the Spirit to do something and you don't understand why you do it for maybe 6 months or a year, so on or so forth down the road. But I think there's that key moment that kind of clicks, you know, God remembered. And I understand. And I think this is kind of what's happening with Noah, saying, you know, it didn't originally make sense, but I get it, God. I get it now. You've remembered me. And so I think as we consider this message from the flood, I think I would encourage you to keep on, of course, having faith, but also trusting in his commandments, whether things are good or things are bad, whether you're not in the storm or you're in the midst of it. Because really, at the end of the day, in the pit of loneliness, in the pit of hardship, we know that God remembers. Amen.